This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing, and signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial. And hope you're having a great day. It's going to get a little warmer today, according to plan, and things may get a bit warmer in the U.S. Senate. And the impeachment trial of Donald John Trump goes forward. It should be a fait accompli. We know how it's going to turn out. He's going to be acquitted. And the two U.S. senators from Louisiana are going to vote to acquit Donald John Trump. And probably all 47 Democrats are going to convict him on the two articles that came from the United States House. The New York Times puts it this way: a divided Senate began the impeachment trial of President Trump on Tuesday in utter acrimony as Republicans blocked Democrats' efforts to subpoena documents related to the pressure campaign on Ukraine, and moderate Republicans forced last-minute changes to rules that had been tailored to the president's wishes. In a series of party-line votes, 53-47, punctuated by hours of contentious debate by the House impeachment managers and the president's legal team, Senate Republicans turned back repeated attempts by Democrats to subpoena documents from the White House, the State Department, the Pentagon, that could shed light on President Trump. More votes were to come throughout the evening before the Times went to press, but nothing changed. 53-47 on every vote of significance. And Mike Wolf, it seems like this is game, set, match in the U.S. Senate, and it all comes down to who has the votes. And right now, Republicans have 53 members. Democrats only have 45, by the way. Angus King of Maine and Bernie Sanders of Vermont, who's not even a Democrat, who may very well be the Democratic nominee for president of the United States, they vote with the Democrats. And it seems that the evidence has very little to do with how people are voting. It comes down to who they're supporting for president. What do you think?
Well, it certainly looks so. The thing that struck me the most about yesterday's proceedings was how the Republican lawyers kept insisting that Trump had done nothing wrong. They said absolutely nothing wrong. Like, the call was perfect, Trump says, and these people have no credibility. How can they say that with a straight face? It's just amazing to me. They continue to build their arguments on lies.
Now, Mike Wolf is a libertarian, and in the past, through the many years we've talked, he's criticized Democrats just as vociferously as he is Senate Republicans right now. But it seems as though you've definitely taken a stand on this. What got to you as far as convincing you that the president's guilty of what he is charged?
Well, all of the evidence presented to the House committees, the Intelligence Committee and the Judiciary Committee, it's clear that he disregarded congressional appropriations and then tried to use the withholding of the appropriations to extort improper advantages from the Ukrainians. That's obvious. So again, it's just ridiculous that the Republicans say there was nothing wrong about this. To me, it's just terrible. I mean, the Ukrainians are in a war with Russia. They're trying to conquer their country. They need our help, and it's just totally inappropriate. And the lying, though, the whole structure of lies that have been built by this administration since the very beginning is what offends me the most. So basically, it's a lawless and totally dishonest and corrupt administration.
Why are the Republicans so unified in their support?
Because the people vote for them, and a lot of people
the
like
base.
Trump. Obviously, yes, yeah, mm-hmm. The so-called base, but whoever votes for Republicans are the ones they're talking to and looking at and responding for.
And Republicans, and I'm sure we have many who are listening, you're probably getting on their last nerve, Mike. They say, well, look at the Democrats. They're united, too. Is there some politics going on both sides?
I was just about to bring that up. The problem is, of course, the Democrats. Why are the Republicans so popular? Because the Democrats give such poor alternatives. That's why I'm always speaking for independents and third parties. That we obviously don't have an adequate selection between Trump supporters and Trump ideologues and Democrats. But the people will not vote for anything but a Democrat or a Republican. So they've put themselves in this mess, but here we are.
And in the South, every U.S. Senator is a Republican in the Deep South, except for Doug Jones in Alabama, who may very well be unseated. He only won because he was running against Roy Moore. And John Kennedy and Bill Cassidy, I would say the odds are almost, never 100%, but they're almost 100% that both of these gentlemen, who were Democrats along with the president 15 years ago, will vote with their Republican brothers and sisters.
Yeah, how do you define the Deep South?
I would define the Deep South as Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi.
Florida, Georgia.
Texas ought to be Deep South, and it fits. As far, there are no Democrats in statewide office of note in Texas. The governor's a Republican. And
the Carolinas, I guess.
The Carolinas, not North Carolina. South Carolina, I would call the Deep South. North Carolina's got a Democratic governor right now. But still, the politics in this region, 11 SEC states, and by the way, the SEC states include Missouri and Tennessee and Kentucky and Arkansas. All of them went for Trump, and all of them will go for him again, except for perhaps Florida. And if Florida goes to the Democrats, they win the election. But we saw this at the Superdome a week ago. The South Carolina people, largely with Clemson, and the Louisiana people with LSU, they were cheering for President Trump. And it was almost an all-white crowd rooting for two teams that are 85% African-American, but... And that may very well be a good thing that we have white people willing to cheer for black gladiators, but the politics are much different. I suspect most of these African-American players are not Republicans, not supportive of the president, and almost all the fans, of course, are white. And if you're a white male in the South, Mike Wolf, you're most likely going to be a Trumpster. Why are you not a Trumpster?
Because I can't stand the Republicans. They're trashing of the Constitution. I'm a fiscal conservative. The Republicans claimed to be for years, but now they don't even claim to be fiscal conservatives. That's another one of Trump's big lies, that he's going to end the deficits and pay down the debt. It's just ridiculous. But that's a pretty cynical blending of sports and politics by you, Mr. Engstrom. I'm surprised to hear you saying that. Gladiators? What happened to athletes and sportsmanship, competition? Golly, what a negative view of the players.
Well, I mean it positively. In fact, I copied that remark from the late, great George Eames, who used that term a few times. But I think sports and politics go hand in glove. Look at our governor. He's kind of attached himself to the LSU football program. And who can blame him, Mike Wolf? Why was the president at the game? He's not going to go.
He's not going to go
to a bridge tournament.
Politicians follow where the people are. They go where the fishing is. They go where the votes are.
Well, a listener notes that more people go to NASCAR events than they do to college football games, and of course, most of them are conservative Republicans too. But I haven't seen the president. Maybe I'm wrong. I haven't seen him at Daytona or any of these other places where NASCAR is popular. What was it Mitt Romney said? Not Mitt Romney. It was John Kerry who said, "Who amongst us does not love NASCAR?" And, of course, John Kerry lost a close race to George Bush, who appeared to be a regular guy. Far from it. Born with a silver spoon, as we know. But we're veering off into territory. Why is Trump this man from Gotham City who was born with two silver spoons? Why is he so popular with poor whites in the South?
I think the main base for the reason for his popularity is his anti-elitism. It's reminiscent of George Wallace. He attacks the pointy heads, the establishment people, the established institutions, the banks, even though he benefits from these institutions. But I think that's the main reason. Plus, he's entertaining. People see him as an entertaining figure. In that respect, he's somewhat similar to Edwin Edwards. People found him vastly entertaining, and he was. And that's one thing people look for in politicians.
A year ago on this program, Edwin Edwards said that he, Edwin Edwards, spent the night of June 14th, 1996, on Donald Trump's yacht. The two of them were celebrating the Donald's 50th birthday, and Edwin Edwards was the guest of honor on the yacht. So they do have some commonality, And they both were at the football game last week, a big game, as we know, that gave LSU its fourth national championship. But Trump is a guy who, as we know, is malleable when it comes to not only his politics, but his associations. After all, he had Bill and Hillary Clinton to his wedding, and they attended. And here he is commenting on Ken Starr, the guy who's now his lawyer, when Ken Starr was prosecuting President Bill Clinton.
I think Ken Starr is a lunatic. I really think that Ken Starr is a disaster. I hated the way the president handled it. It was a long and terrible process. I really think that Ken Starr was terrible.
Now, if you were called by the president to be on his defense team, would you take the call and go to Washington and be there in the U.S. Senate defending our president?
You know, it's hard to say when you're not there, and if you're in the business of doing that.
I think you would.
You take jobs, you might, but I don't know. I've asked myself whether I'd work for the Trump administration, and I doubt it. I don't think so.
Wouldn't that be something? He could do a lot worse, by the way. I'm not so sure Ken Starr is a great lawyer, but the president has him on his team. We'll talk more after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757, and talk at talklouisiana.org if you'd like to join the conversation a bit longer with Mike Wolf, the astute and veteran attorney, a libertarian who, as you can hear, is not a fan of the president and his actions, and there is an impeachment trial that is ongoing that will continue today, and WRKF will cover it with Ernest. Miriam in Mandeville writes, the United States' greatest asset in many respects is our strong institutional and public adherence to trust in the rule of law. We now have a lawless president and a sycophant Senate. Our public infrastructure is literally falling apart. We are the world capital of incarceration. Well over half of the adult humans in this country, either for one reason or another, cannot vote, or their votes don't count. Millions of Americans are so upset they're about ready to take up arms against each other. And regarding the lawless and treasonous white rights and evangelical conservatives, some already have. What a mass murder every 3 weeks, she asks. At what point will economically important foreign investors and financiers declare our country a sham, a shell of our former great selves, and turn to other areas to park their money? Maybe that's what Trump, she writes, and his Russia publican ilk, strong words for Miriam, are hoping for. Then they can buy up American assets at fire sale prices. A bit of a dark view from Miriam, but we do have great division in our country. And where is this going? Is it going to get better before, or get worse before it gets better?
Probably. Jim, when we were discussing Trump's popularity, you can never discuss it. You can never separate it from the issue of the alternatives. And again, this is connected to this tribalism you hear about so much, or the team nature of political competition today. The alternative was Hillary Clinton. That's why I'm fond of saying a little bit facetiously that the Democrats elected Trump by giving such a poor alternative. And they seem hell-bent on doing it now. Right. By talking about nominating socialists and so forth.
Now, David writes that Democrats are griping about not having John Bolton testify, and the Republicans have voted that down. And Trump acknowledged in Switzerland that he didn't want him to testify because they parted on bad terms. That's like saying that Monica Lewinsky shouldn't testify because she and Clinton parted on bad terms. But anyway, good point from David. Democrats are not real happy about the prospect of having either Hunter Biden or Joe Biden brought before the Senate. Would that be a circus, or would that be appropriate considering the president's phone call did include Joe Biden? That's what this is all about.
You know, they're making the argument, but as the Democratic congressmen have been saying, it would be an irrelevant witness. What Biden did several years ago has very little connection with what Trump did just very recently. He was trying to get dirt on Biden, but there's no showing. You have to have a foundation for introducing evidence of events that are unconnected to the main matter in controversy.
Delia writes, in Louisiana, is Louisiana a deep red state? This is a question. We cannot know this so long as our state, local, and federal elections are not synchronized and GOP-led voter suppression is allowed to continue. That's from Delia. Any validity to Delia's remarks?
What is her point about voter suppression?
Delia says it's GOP-led voter suppression.
I don't think there's serious voter suppression in Louisiana. The people have they can vote, they can register, and no one's trying to throw them off the rolls improperly.
All right. David in Lafayette writes, Trump is the poor man's idea of how a rich man should be, according to a book I recently read. He's larger than life, incredibly vulgar, disloyal. He has a bit of Huey Long in him in his demagogue manner, though he certainly is not sharing the wealth with anyone. Does David have a point?
Well, yes, of course Trump's a demagogue. That's what he is. That's why he's where he is. But the U.S. has long succumbed to the blandishments of demagogues, you could say. In other words, they love demagogues. And having a decent polity requires you to go beyond demagogues and try to elect people on the basis of reason and objective analysis.
Donna in Mid-City. Donna, good morning. You're on with Mike Wolf on Talk Louisiana. Hello, Donna.
Hi. Mike, can you please explain to me why Hillary Clinton was such a poor candidate? Thank you.
Well, first thing that occurred to me was the Iraq War. Another reason is her protectionism. She and Sanders both joined Trump. They agreed on saying that the way to improve the economic prosperity in the U.S. was to erect protectionist walls against the rest of the world. And that's just wrong. It doesn't do that. She basically represented the Clinton administration. Look at criminal justice.
I think many would agree with you on that. But the Trump philosophy has been to have tariffs. That's even worse, isn't it?
Well, it's similar. They went in the same direction in that regard, and that's bad. Nobody was standing up and speaking out for free trade and for free markets. That's the road to prosperity, not protectionism.
Dan downtown. Hello, Dan. You're on Talk Louisiana with Mike Wolf.
Yeah, Mr. Wolf, given the money poured into state judicial elections and the virtual blood on the floor of the Senate Judiciary Committee for the selection of federal judges, should we add the judicial branch of government to this dark view?
Well, they're, of course, a major player in shaping our laws and designing public policy. But you have to wait and see. I don't think we can damn the judiciary totally right now, even though Trump is putting in a lot of right-wing ideologues into the judicial office. We have to wait and see. We'll see what their rulings are. I think it's too early to tell.
All right, Dan. Another listener says libertarians are interesting, but I'm not sure their ideas are viable. Mike, I think, for example, the libertarian who's received the most votes in Louisiana history, I believe, is a gentleman named Sameer Zaytoon, who's not what you would call a traditional politician. I see him at the press club walking around in his socks. He's a fascinating gentleman, but your party has not gotten any traction nationally. Why is that the case?
Well, because of the alternatives. Again, it's generally...
Well, you just criticize the major parties.
I am. No, but the thing is, you have to look at every election, and usually the voters are so opposed to one of the major candidates that they don't want to do anything to lower the chances of their favorite candidate winning, and they consider voting for a third-party candidate who cannot win as lowering the chances that their candidate would win. But I try to argue against that and say you've got to show people what you want by... Even knowing your candidate's not going to win, you should vote for him to put the votes on the scoreboard and let the major parties see this is what the kind of policies the voters want. But and Sameer Zaytoon, a friend of mine, that was, again, the shape of the race made that happen. It happened because you had a couple of other candidates that were fighting very nastily and very vigorously against each other, and he looked like a sensible man compared to them. And that he was the alternative. And they didn't like the fighting between the insurance commissioner candidates, so there was a big protest vote that went with...
Well, we've got a Senate race in Louisiana this year, and other than Antoine Pierce, who has few resources, nobody's lining up to run against Bill Cassidy. I would think a well-organized, well-financed opponent would give him a race. Why isn't somebody lining up to run against Cassidy when the Senate is so vital to the future of the American fabric.
Because, again, the main thing is people vote party, and we've got this tribal breakdown that Republicans will not vote for a Democrat. They feel that they just won't. And the Democrats, well, usually won't vote for a Republican. They've got good reasons for not doing it. But you, again, have to look at the candidates in the particular race. The party system is at the bottom of the problems. People vote party and not policy. Look at the fiscal situation. $1 trillion deficits as far as the eye can see, and no one's doing anything about it, not the Democrats.
Not even that great bean counter John Kennedy.
No one's doing anything about it. The only people who care about it are the libertarians, the only ones.
Well, Bill Clinton cared about it. He was a Democrat who balanced the budget.
He gave us
a surplus.
That happened.
And got impeached.
Because of the end of the Cold War, for we had a couple of years of balanced budgets.
All right, Mike Wolf, we'll be calling on you soon. Thanks for your comments, and we'll be back after this pause for the news. 877-217-5757 is your number, and the whole world is following the impeachment trial, so you will hear most of the action as it occurs this afternoon. Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, has done a masterful job keeping his troops in line, and he has, by his own admission, said that he is a defender of the president. These people are jurors in the Senate, but let's face it, the Republicans are going to vote to acquit, Democrats are going to vote to convict, and the vote quite likely will be 53-47 right along party lines. So you got to think that politics has something to do with this. The president is in Switzerland, and the New York Times puts it this way: President Trump swept into this moneyed Alpine village on Tuesday, Davos, Switzerland, full of brio and flattery, schmoozing with global business leaders as if there were no talk of removing him from office and no impeachment trial unfolding 4,000 miles away in Washington. Mr. Trump appeared to relish the escape offered by the World Economic Forum and the friendly, to his face at least, crowd of elites in the snow-covered Alps. He was in a jovial mood, according to people who spoke with him, engaging in animated conversations, chief executives like Brian Moynihan of Bank of America and many others. And so the president is very confident, as he should be, that he will be acquitted, as Bill Clinton was in the year of 1999. Clinton was a lame duck president at that time, much younger. In fact, he was younger than Trump even then, 2 months younger, 2 months and 5 days. The president in 1999, Bill Clinton was 52 years old. This president is 73 and will be 74 on June 14th and will be the oldest president ever elected at any time, including Reagan in his second term, if he wins in November. And the president is at least even money to win a second term. The U.S. has been in a practice of reelecting presidents, just like Louisiana has been reelecting most of its governors. 3 of the last 4 Louisiana governors have served 2 terms: Mike Foster, Bobby Jindal, and now John Bel Edwards. And when you look at U.S. presidents, Bill Clinton was a 2-termer, George Bush was a 2-termer, Barack Obama, 2-termer, and Donald Trump, if he continues, will be 4 in a row. And the Democrats at this point have no candidate who is in polls beating the president. The one closest is Joe Biden, and the Republicans, with this being a political year, and the fact that Biden was the gentleman mentioned by the president in the phone call which caused the House to impeach the president, they want Biden to testify, and they want Hunter Biden to testify. And if partisanship were taken out, they would, and so would John Bolton, and so would Rudy Giuliani, and we would have a real trial, but we're not going to have that. Last night, the Chief Justice, John Roberts, chided the U.S. Senate, saying that it is the most deliberative body in the world, with great authority and great reverence by the American people, and that they should behave as such. And right now, it is a bitter time in Washington, and it reflects the bitterness in the nation. People are revved up on each side of the political spectrum, and many in between are getting excited, too, about what they believe, either for or against this president, who, like Muhammad Ali in the 1960s, you can ask about Donald Trump and pretty much get a grip of who this person is you're talking to and what they stand for. And Muhammad Ali was not the president of the United States. Donald Trump is. And the president, as we know, has been a malleable person. 15 years ago, he was a Democrat. And 12 years ago, he went on CNN with Wolf Blitzer, and he said all kinds of nice things about Nancy Pelosi and said that Bill Clinton was the victim of a witch hunt and that George Bush, the Republican president at the time, actually, I think Bush had just left office. No, take it back. Matt says he was in his final year. That he should have been removed from office for sending America off to war in Iraq under false pretenses. Here is President Trump as Citizen Trump in the year of 2008.
Well, you know, when she first got in and was named Speaker, I met her, and I'm very impressed by her. I think she's a very impressive person. I like her a lot. But I was surprised that she didn't do more in terms of Bush and going after Bush. It was almost, it just seemed like she was going to really look to impeach Bush and get him out of office, which personally I think would have been a wonderful thing.
Impeaching him?
Absolutely, for the war. For the war.
Because of the conduct of
the
war.
Well, he lied. He got us into the war with lies. And, I mean, look at the trouble Bill Clinton got into with something that was totally unimportant. And they tried to impeach him, which was nonsense. And yet Bush got us into this horrible war with lies, by lying, by saying they had weapons of mass destruction, by saying all sorts of things that turned out not to be true.
So Donald Trump is on the record, and this is a 62-year-old Donald Trump, 62 years old. It's hard to say when you're 62 that you're committing a youthful indiscretion. He was on the record as saying that President Clinton should not have been impeached and that President Bush should have been impeached. And President Bush was the last U.S. president to serve two terms, and he did so largely with Republican support. And most of those voters are now solidly in the corner of Donald Trump. And in the U.S. Senate, people like Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, who were going at the president and being ridiculed by them in 2016, they're now some of his biggest defenders. Remember Marco Rubio, Little Marco, and Ted Cruz, Lion Ted. Lion Ted was the name that Trump gave him and accused Ted Cruz's dad of killing President Kennedy. And President Kennedy and President Johnson came up when this current president was speaking with reporters today, saying that they would have been impeached on their first day if people would have taken into account what they were saying as far as horse trading. I think that's what he was referring to. And, you know, you do this and we'll do that. But that's done all the time in politics, but it's not done with foreign adversaries and foreign countries. And this president was obviously withholding aid to an ally with us against Vladimir Putin, Ukraine, because he wanted the president of Ukraine to investigate Joe Biden, who is considered, even now, the candidate who would be most likely to unseat President Donald John Trump. And maybe Biden will get the nomination, and if that happens, there will be debates, presumably, and then those two can go toe-to-toe, these two septuagenarians. Biden is older than Trump. He's 77 years old. Trump will be 74 by the time the convention is held, and by the time he debates his Democratic challenger. So we're going to have the oldest matchup in the history of American politics, if it's Biden or Trump or Warren and Trump, or Bernie Sanders, who's even older than Biden, against Donald Trump. It will be fascinating to see. And think back to 1960 when Richard Nixon ran against John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Kennedy was 43 and Nixon was 47. So together they were 90 years old. If it's 77-year-old Biden and 74-year-old Trump, together they will be 151 years old. It's great that people are living longer and functional in our society at the highest levels of government. That gives encouragement to all of us, but we have a 35-year-old age limit on the front end to be president. Some say we should have an age limit on the back end. We'll be talking about that and more, and of course, WRKF will be airing the impeachment proceedings. Sorry we misfired with Jason Andreessen today, but hopefully we'll have him back soon. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Stay tuned.